The obvious answer is it's payback time. It's the Wild West. Damn, I'm on the wrong thing. You'd see something really ugly. You know, you've got abortion. My penis. Bigger. It's different. In the eye of the beholder.
Welcome to the Renaissance, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Bubble Boy, episode 77, where we last left off. Larry the Med was getting married to Clarice, the dirty, dirty, dirty virginal Roman hoe.
And the people of Florence aren't so happy about this. What's wrong with our chicks, they said.
What's wrong with our whores, they said. Good. Our dirty, dirty. Yeah. Oh, God. And Piero was like, listen, well, none of them, any one of you produced a pope? No? shut the fuck up. If you don't have pope eggs in your woo-woo, then we're looking for the pope eggs. We need pope eggs.
Moving on
now. Need me a Medici pope.
They were like George Jefferson, always looking to move up to the big thing in the sky. I can't remember what it's called.
So Pierre, to take their minds off it, he decided to throw a major festival. Unfortunately, gout got in the way. He's like, listen, I'd throw a party, but I'm gouty. So Larry threw himself a jousting tournament.
He's like, what's the equivalent of a rock concert? You know, in 1470 or whatever the heck it is. It's like, jousting. I'm going to bring that back. A lot of color, a lot of pageantry. It's going to be badass. It's something that the guys from Always Sunny in Philadelphia would put on. This is going to be epic. And it was.
Really? Always Sunny, they put on terrible things. But why would they don't put on great events.
That's true. But the spectacle of it would distract the eye.
Danny DeVito would be running naked
with a gun in his hand. Where's the dirty whore? Where's the dirty whore?
Your mother was a whore.
So you're right. Piero is basically, you know, on his deathbed, I guess. So Lorenzo has got to do it in all that education, the spectacle that his life has been, all the experiences he's had. He's going to put on one hell of a show in the Piazza Santa Croce in March of 1469. This has got to be awesome. It's got to distract the people, and it's got to be so fantastic that they're going to forgive me and forget that I'm marrying a dirty Roman whore.
I hate the kind of person that your whore mother turned me into. Dennis, your mother is a dirty, dirty whore.
Oh, God damn it, Dad.
I mean, all during the 60s, before I met my whore wife, I was a boxer. I just can't believe this.
Hey, Dad, keep your
voice down. You whore! Horrible whore wife. Huh? Did you bang my whore wife? Does anybody here have any illegitimate children with my whore wife that I should know about?
I mean, she probably went right from the clinic and banged some guy and got knocked up because your mother was a giant whore.
Oh, you know what, dude? I don't believe you, Frank, all right?
You tell her she's a goddamn whore.
Ooh,
always been a whore.
I called Dennis.
No, I'm not going to be a whore, Frank.
You already a whore. Why not make some money out of it?
No, you're just going to try and make me bang old ladies, and then you're going to have me move on to dudes.
Wait, you got a problem?
Yeah, this makes me seem like a whore.
You are a whore.
No, I'm not a whore. I'm a handsome companion.
Oh, what do you think she's going to do? Call her husband and say she's banging a whore? Dennis, up those stairs.
We'll make that whore my wife. I am proposing to that dirty whore.
And I love boiling denim and banging whores. Roxy, God bless you. You are a good whore. One of the things I like doing most is banging whores. I go out and bang a lot of whores.
Oh, look, I dropped my magnum-sized condom for my big dong. Love that show.
Whore! Your mother was a dirty, dirty whore.
We shouldn't have married her. Oh.
I want to talk about the history of jousting.
Yeah.
Right?
Please, joust away. Right?
Or What's another name for jousting, Ray?
Two idiots charging each other on 1,000-pound horses with sticks. But you're probably looking for something shorter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shorter, yeah.
Hmm.
Tilting.
Tilting, of course. The old tilting. Yes, tell me about it.
Tilting at windmills, i.e. Don Quixote. Tilting. Nice. So, jousting apparently started off as a way of showing off your heavy cavalry skills. Comes from the term jousting comes from the old French joster, which comes from the Latin juxtare, to approach or to meet. So you'd have two guys on horses approach each other and
full force,
then try and kill each other.
Yeah, meet.
Now, it started sort of in the 11th and 12th centuries, sort of in the High Middle Ages. And when it started off, it was quite brutal.
Ooh.
The only armor that they had back then was sort of a big solid helmet called the Great Helm and a shield and then sort of chainmail. And they would, in the early days, apparently you would ride at each other with your jousting stick, your lance, but when you got close, you would pull out your sword and basically try and stab the other guy to death. And plate armor, full plate armor, didn't become common until the Renaissance, the early 15th century. But the early jousting was basically just a duel, and it was winner take all. If you killed the other guy, you got his weapons, his horse, his armor, and woman.
Hell yeah!
It was basically like pistols at 40 paces. The early version of that. It was lances at 40 paces. It started. But later on, during the late Middle Ages, it became a lot more gentlemanly. Ooh, yes. During the age of chivalry, it was considered dishonorable to. Not only dishonorable to kill your opponent, but dishonorable to exploit his disadvantages. So if your opponent stumbled or dropped his lance, you would stop and get off your horse and help him back up. Are you okay, my good fellow? My good sir, you okay? Let's start again. This time I will close my eyes and give you the advantage. No, sir, I insist. Please, no, I think you should have the advantage.
The Chip and
By
Dale.
The way, do you know where the term chivalry comes from?
Chivalrous. You stick a shiv in them. No, I don't know. Please tell me.
That's probably where the word shiv comes from. Is. You're lancing someone. The root of chivalry is chevalier, which is the word for a horse.
Okay.
Right? Old French chevalerie comes from the medieval Latin caballerius, horseman.
Right.
So a chevalier is a guy who rides on a horse, heavy cavalry, chivalry, chevalier, all basically means horseman. And the term knight, a knight in shining armor, comes from the same sort of root. But before the 12th century, before your heavy cavalry, the word knight, C-N-I-H-T, was just a term for a servant.
Huh.
And then in the 12th century, it became used for a military follower, somebody who followed a king around. And basically helped him out. And then eventually it became a word for a special class of noblemen who had cavalry, the milites nobiles. And then it was only after 1300 that the term knighthood became used for a junior rank of the nobility. Before that, a knighthood was a term for boyhood or youth.
Huh.
In his knighthood. It just means he was a young man coming up. Then eventually it changed. Then later, by the 14th century, towards the end of the 14th century, the term sort of became romanticized to mean a young nobleman who was seeking to prove himself through honorable exploits, the knight errant the Don Quixote.
Right.
And one of the things that they would do to prove themselves worthy, usually of a woman who they didn't want to fuck, they just wanted, because she was normally married, a bit like, you know, this gets back to Petrarch and was it Julia? Who was Petrarch's Laura? Woman? Julia? Laura. Thank you. Uh-huh. Laura. Yeah, Laura. It was just to earn her platonic esteem, love and respect.
Right. I esteem you.
Yeah. One of the things they did was the padam. And the joust was part of the padam. PASD'ARMES. French padam. Right. The passage of arms is what it stands for. Now, this is sort of a bit of a fucking frat boy war game thing that they would do in the late 14th century, very popular throughout the 15th century, where a knight or a group of knights would stake out a sort of a travelled spot, like a bridge or a city gate, and let it be known that any other knight who wished to pass...
Right.
Had to first fight
or
be disgraced. Basically, the frat boys of their day. Yeah, or the Black Knight in Monty Python.
None shall pass.
It's basically, here we go.
You fight with the strength of many men, Sir Knight. I am Arthur, King of the Britons. I seek the finest and the bravest knights in the land to join me in my court at Camelot. You have proved yourself worthy. Will you join me? You make me sad. So be it. Come, Patsy.
None shall pass.
What?
None shall pass.
I have no quarrel with you, good Sir Knight, but I must cross this bridge.
Then you shall die.
I command you, as King of the Britons, to stand aside.
I move for no man.
So be it. Now stand aside, worthy adversary.
'Tis but a scratch.
A scratch? Your arm's off.
No, it isn't.
Well, what's that then?
I've heard worse.
You liar.
Come on, you pansy.
Victory is mine. We thank thee, Lord, that in thy mouth...
Come on, then.
What?
How at you?
You are indeed brave, Sir Knight, but the fight is mine.
Oh, had enough, eh?
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look!
Just a flesh wound.
Look, stop that!
Chicken!
Chicken! Look, I'll have your leg. Right!
Right, I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here!
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
I'm invincible!
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs. How about you? Come on, then.
All right. We'll call it a draw. Come, Patsy.
Oh, I see. Running away, eh? You yellow bastard. Come back here and...
I love how the language goes from stand aside, Sir Knight, to you're a bloody loony.
Oh my god.
Goes from like formal language to just
it goes from Latin to pig Latin.
So that was the thing. Yeah, they're basically the frat boys of their day these nights, doing keggers in between jousting, lots of push-up competitions, a lot of chest bumping, a lot of raping and going, "Oh well, you know, boys will be boys." Yeah. That kind of stuff. Yeah, typical frat boy stuff. Interesting story about the Black Knight, apparently. According to John Cleese, the inspiration for that scene came because when he was at school, he heard the story of Arichion of Phigalia.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with Arichion of Phigalia, Ray?
I'm going to go with no.
He was the champion pancratiast.
Right.
In the ancient Olympic Games. Oh. The pancration was a fighting style, a martial art. It was sort of a combination of boxing and wrestling. It's basically Jeet Kune Do.
Right.
Bruce Lee developed thousands of years later. And during the 52nd and 53rd Olympiads, 572 BCE and 568 BCE, respectively, Arichion of Phigalia was the winner of the Pancration tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, for Arichion,
right.
In the 53rd Olympiad, 568 BCE, although he won his fight,
right.
After he was declared the winner, they discovered he was actually dead.
What?
His opponent had been suffocating him to death, but with his last breath, he managed to thrust his leg back and dislocate either his opponent's toe or his ankle, depending on the version. There are two main versions. They differ on that. But the opponent let go.
Right.
Arichion was declared the winner, but then he was dead. Because he'd actually died
during victory.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Apparently, I love this. This is the best part of the story. In his last moments, his trainer, Mickey, yelled out to him, "What a noble epitaph! He was never defeated at Olympia." No. So one guess, who get to keep the prize money?
Oh.
And he's dead. Oh, well, I guess so. Yeah. He didn't have any family, so I'll take it.
Here I come, horse. Yeah.
I was watching the old Adam West Batman with Fox the other day, and it was a penguin episode. Of course, Burgess Meredith, who's Mickey in the Rocky films, is also the penguin in the Batman films.
Love that.
Yeah. My fine feathered friends. So fucking great. That show, seriously, like Chrissy and I were talking about it, that Adam West Batman show is timeless because they were just had so much fun with it. They were just so fucking around so much with it. It's just gold.
I love it. Still watch it
today. Yeah. So tongue-in-cheek, the whole thing. It's just timeless. Perfectly done. Anyway, back to Larry the Med's jousting competition, I guess. We should get back to that. So he decked out one of these squares in Florence. One side of the square had a specially erected don't get turned on specially erected stand draped with hanging silk colorful awnings.
Oh.
That's where the leading families of Florence would stand.
Sure.
The plebs were crammed around the rest of the three sides, hanging out of windows, off of balconies, the whole deal.
Yeah.
It's in the middle of the city. They're doing this.
Fuck.
They had heralds dressed to the nines, playing fanfares on trumpets, as 18 competing knights appeared on horseback, each one led into the arena by a page boy dressed in a coloured tunic. And who was the most fabulous of the knights, right?
Yeah, as each knight came in, they dipped their lances towards the throne of the queen of the tournament, Lucrezia Donati, the young wife of a leading citizen. She was supposedly the most beautiful woman of Florence. And when people weren't watching, let's be honest, when people weren't watching her cleavage, they were checking out Lorenzo himself, decked out on a white charger, dressed in red and white velvet, a white silk cloak lined with scarlet flowing from his shoulders, and his Medici shield was studded with glimmering diamonds. So you got the hot babe, you've got the guy dressed out to the nines in his red and his white, he's got the diamonds on his shield, just showy as fuck, and if his plan is to distract everybody, so far it's working beautifully.
Now, they say she's the most beautiful woman in the city, but I've seen Botticelli's painting of her, and...
Not so much?
Yeah, she's a 5 at best.
Right.
I would say. Yeah. She was apparently a 10 in Florence, though, but I don't know. I mean, well, I mean, Botticelli's no fucking schmuck when it comes to painting either, so I don't know. Yeah. But Larry's friend, Sigismondo della Stufa, wrote to Lorenzo. Lorenzo had left Florence in 1466, probably to go see a king or a pope or something. He would have only been like 16, 17 at the time. Yeah. Already, you know, had the hots for Lucrezia. She was married to some like leading citizen. But, you know, it's one of these Petrarch Laura type of deals. Right. Della Stufa wrote to Lorenzo describing how she looked as she left church that day. He writes, "You never saw anything so beautiful, dressed in black and with her head veiled, stepping so gracefully that it was as if the very stones and walls should worship her as she passed. I will say no more, lest you be tempted by sin in this holy season."
I can't fuck up.
In other words.
Yeah, go ahead.
In other words, both hands above the doona when you go to sleep right tonight. no thinking about her dressed in black leaving church. Because I don't know about you, Ray, yeah, but.
Oh, a veil?
No. Dressed in black with a veil leaving
and
church? Nothing is hotter.
I'm done. I'm hard.
And it doesn't make it any better that you call your... Lorenzo called his dick...
Jew hammer.
Or...
There's pal driver, the sledgehammer.
just nicknames, just friendly nicknames for my penis. Oh, my God.
D'Estufa said, "Look, she looks so beautiful, dressed in black and graceful." Yeah. Then he said,
"Not to mention her vagina."
So, you know, that kind of took it in a whole different direction. But then he said,
"Because she's a whore."
Clearly, he meant to say she's
anyway,
a whore.
But
yeah,
I mean, he's hold on. So let me just—he's throwing this jousting tournament,
right,
to take people's minds off the fact that he's getting married to this Roman girl, Clarice Orsini.
Yes.
But then he has the queen of the tournament isn't Clarice Orsini.
Hello? Yeah.
It's some other chick.
Right. A local.
That he's got the hots for. How do you think Clarice would have felt about that? It's like you get engaged to some broad and you go, "Listen, fantastic, so happy that we're getting married. I'm going to have a bucks party."
Right.
"And at the bucks party, my current girlfriend..."
Right. "Who's hot.
Is going to be the lady of honor..."
Right.
"...at my bucks party, but I'm going to marry you."
Right.
"Hope you're okay with that."
"And if you're not, women don't have any rights, so
yes,
thank you for playing."
That's right.
Yeah. Nope.
Just... Look at my bank balance before you answer.
Right. But see, the thing is, he's got to placate the city because she can't just rock up in there because they're still mad at Piero. They're still mad at Lorenzo. And I'm sure they're going to be mad at Clarice as well. They've got to placate the citizens of Florence. Then she can come in. So you're right. It's far from perfect. But I think it's too soon to bring her in when tension may still be high. It's my guess. It's my guess.
Now, the tournament was all for show, unlike the earlier tournaments I said were like duels. Right. This one, no one's meant to get hurt.
Sure.
Although sometimes accidents happen. During an earlier jousting tournament, the Condottieri Montefeltro, Lord of Urbino,
right,
had lost an eye.
Mm. And don't get me wrong, a patch is sexy, but come on. Ow. And he's not, we're not done with him in our story yet. But just remember, he's probably got a patch or a false eye for the rest of these episodes.
Federico de Montefeltro. We saw a painting of him when we were in Florence.
Mm-hmm. Trying to remember. Was it in the museum? Was it the...
It was in the Academia, maybe? I can't really remember which, where we saw it. But yeah, it's a sort of a side-on portrait of him on one side and his wife on the other side. And because it's like a full-on side-on portrait,
right.
Because he'd lost his eye. So his portrait was painted just with his one good eye.
Yeah, good call.
Facing the
viewer. Good call, I'm just saying.
It's a portrait by Piero della Francesca. I know we saw it. I remember tour guide that we had talking about just the point in Renaissance realism.
Right.
Anyway, yes. So you accidents could happen in these things, but none happened on this one.
Yes.
No surprises who won the tournament. Larry won, even though, again, in his own memoirs, he wrote, "I was given the first prize, even though I was not well-versed in the use of weapons or skilled in how to inflict blows on my opponents."
Now,
so again, he's being disarmingly honest about himself.
He could afford to be, I guess.
Yeah.
Well,
but he could have also said,
"Oh yeah,
I won because I'm a total fucking badass."
That's right. I mean, just picture,
I'm number one. Right. Hashtag Tiger Blood. Hashtag Winner. And no one would have called bullshit on it because he was Larry the Med, right? But he didn't. He was like, honestly, I probably didn't deserve that, but they gave it to me anyway because I was getting married and I'm rich.
But you've got to imagine Trump, 20, 19 years old, in the similar situation.
He would have
went, "Oh, it's like everybody else had bone spurs. I kicked so much ass. I just, boom, touch them and they would go down. They would rain blows down on me. I didn't even feel it. It's like I'm Superman. Oh, I was amazing. It was the greatest presentation ever." But that's what he would have written.
Yeah, no, this guy, he comes across as relatively humble.
As much as he can be.
As much as he can be, exactly. Yeah. Now, the event was a huge success. The citizens all went away happy. And this is something that Lorenzo learned from.
Right.
Spend money, throw parties, bread and circuses.
Yeah.
And you can get away with banging hot.
Boring girl.
Well, not hot, really. She wasn't that hot, apparently. But inspected. And checked out.
Right. She passed.
She's not foreign. She's Italian, but
kind of foreign. Foreign-y.
You can get away with anything. Yeah. Apparently, her dowry that she was coming with was 6,000 florins.
Fuck.
Unfortunately, the jousting tournament to make people forget about the fact that he was marrying her cost 8,000 florins.
Yeah, I'll take
but
that.
Lucky. Yeah. Lucky he's rich.
Yeah. Oh, 8,000. I didn't even notice it was gone from my account. Thank you very much.
By the way, jousting in France ended in 1559. Do you know why?
Did a king die? No, tell me why. I don't know.
Nearly. Yes. Well, yes, he did die. King Henry II died of wounds that he got in a jousting tournament.
Oh my god! Yeah, this color stuff.
And they were like, "Yeah, maybe
not so much.
Maybe in retrospect, charging at each other with sharp, pointy sticks really fast wasn't
Isn't there something else we can do?
Best idea we've had.
Like bodybuilding. We could flex
chess?
Our muscles.
Chess.
There we
what
go.
About chess. Yeah. Can we play chess?
Well, I was going to go with shaving all the hair off your body, oiling up, get a suntan, and flex. But we can do chess. That's fine. That's fine. Without a shirt.
You're sounding like Mac now on Sonny.
Sorry. I've been watching too much of that. I'm sorry.
Now, 4 months after the jousting tournament, Clarice arrived in Florence for her wedding. But unfortunately, all she could hear was the screaming of the lambs.
Knowledge.
You're so ambitious, aren't you? You know what you look like to me with your good bag and your cheap shoes? You look like a rube. A well-scrubbed, hustling rube with a little taste. Good nutrition's given you some length of bone, but you're not more than one generation from poor wire trash, are you, Agent Starling? And that accent you've tried so desperately to shed, pure West Virginia. What does your father do? Is he a coal miner? Does he stink of the land? You know how quickly the boys found you. All those tedious, sticky fumblings in the back seats of cars while you could only dream of getting out, getting anywhere, getting all the way to the end.
Oh, I got chill bumps. Chill bumps.
My good, good personal friend, Sir Anthony Hopkins, there at his best.
Oh, he was awesome. But you're right. Yeah, I mean, that 8,000 florins spent worked beautifully, because when she rocks up, everything seems to be okay. And it didn't hurt that she was riding the same white charger that Lorenzo used during the tournament. So, which was, by the way, a gift from the King of Naples. We'll get into that later. But the point is, his plan worked. The people are placated. The wedding, I imagine, was quite beautiful as well.
Yeah, and the ceremony was followed by 3 days of banquets at the Palazzo Medici. There's like, imagine just tables with wild boar and suckling pig. Cocaine. And colorful canopies, right. And minstrels.
Sorry. That was my wedding.
Minstrels. It was crystal meth at your wedding, but yeah, it's similar.
Yeah.
Some methamphetamine, I guess. Minstrels playing from balconies. Basically, it was like New Year's Eve at Tony Coniston's house.
But for 3 days straight. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And slightly less cocaine. by the end, more than 300 barrels of the finest Tuscan wine had been emptied. Again, just a little bit less than one of Tony's parties. And everyone was happy, except the married couple. As it turns out, arranged marriages sometimes suck ass, and not in the good Vegas way of sucking ass. I mean, like the bad way of sucking ass. Yeah. They apparently didn't really take to each other that much. If it's ever gonna happen, it'll happen tonight.
So, yeah, so she passed the physical test, and I'm going to leave that right there, but there's other tests they may have done, psychological or whatever, but the point is, these two, not lovebirds, are very different people. You know, she is not exactly as well-educated as him. They said that she had more of a pedestrian intelligence. She was frumpy, but at the same time, because of her background, that still didn't stop her from looking down on everyone. It didn't help that he was spending a lot of his time writing amorous sonnets of a strictly Platonic nature, not to his wife, because that might have helped the relationship, but to the queen of the tournament, Lucrezia Donati. So again, they're just, because they're married, this is a political alliance. They kind of keep on doing their own little separate things, and they are going to spend a decent amount of time away from each other.
I just love the idea. The test that they put her through,
right.
You know, she is like, they had her doing sit-ups, push-ups, timing her on a stopwatch,
treadmill,
with a sprint.
Yeah.
She you see those shooting ranges you always see Keanu Reeves does when he's training for John Wick. She had to go through
rolling over, duck and roll.
Yeah. Ducking, yeah. The timing. Sorry, you were like 4 seconds slower than some of our other candidates.
You killed one of the civilians, so sorry.
She killed a civilian, you're out. And it wasn't one of your own children. If it's one of the children you don't need, because they don't, they're not papal material. Right. That's okay, but that was a kid that had a papal hat on its head. So,
oh, you want to try again?
Don't want to be killing the popes.
Okay, you can try again. Yeah.
So yeah, he's. They stuck it out, and apparently, according to their surviving 10 times at least. According to their surviving correspondence, they had one of these sort of friendly, bantery marriages.
Yeah.
But it certainly wasn't love. And even in his own recording, right, his memoirs, I read, I don't have it written down, but I read, he said something like, a wife was given to, or I took a wife, or should I say, one was given to me, or something like that.
Not exactly.
He doesn't even. Right. He's not even trying to pretty it up in his memoirs. Yeah. They married me off to some. I don't know who she was, right, but I got married. Yeah. You know, I think I did my duty.
Yeah, I'll mount her tonight, but I'm not really looking forward to it. Whatever.
Don't speak. Leave the lights off. Don't talk. I don't want to know your name. Even just
you dirty, dirty Roman whore.
Let me. Yeah. Slip it in. Yeah.
And I'm done.
Yeah, but it can't. He's still writing love poems about Lucretia, yeah, which can't have gone down well with the new wife. But, and he's kind of ugly. Now, right. I like some women dig that. Like you get a lot of women that are interested in midgets. Oh. I mean, that's a thing. There's women. I mean, there are subcultures for everything. Well, you've got your people that dress up as furries. You got your people that are into midgets. That's how Tyrion Lannister did it.
You got the ugly sex, the angry sex. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, there's something out there for everyone.
So, I mean, he had tribes of women that were following around. Clarice, apparently not one of those. No. But they stuck it out because they're good Catholics. Right. What are you going to do? Right. You can't get a divorce. It's a sin.
Right.
And within months of their wedding, Piero died, December 1469, leaving Lorenzo, as we started off our previous episode, as the head of the Medici clan, 20 years old, did a quick accounting of the family bank accounts and the bank's bank accounts, as I said, found they were all in good health. Yeah. But within a few months, he got his first test of his leadership capabilities. One of the guys banished from Florence by Piero,
right,
Bernardo Nardi, or Na 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 na.
I'm back again. Right.
He liked to call himself. Yeah. Launched an invasion. Yeah. The na 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 na
is back.
Attack.
Right.
As it's known in history, in the histories.
Yeah, this is the spring of 1470. He's got Neroni and Acciuoli, who was, I think they were banished as well by Piero. But so they're back. And the point is, this is a crisis. This is a full-blown crisis. This isn't just ill winds blowing into Florence. They already have an armed group of men. They've already marched to Prato, which is only 10 miles away down the road. And they're waiting for reinforcements led by Neroni. And as soon as they get there, this larger force is going to come to Florence. The Signoria hears about this. I'm sure Lorenzo had them get together. They immediately call up the city's militia, and they are ordered to head to Prato on the double to see if they can stop this thing before it gets to Florence. So we're about to see maybe what this new 20-ish year old leader, if he can handle this, what's probably going to be the first of many crises.
Hmm. Well, you know, he pulls together a Florentine militia.
Yeah.
And step one. Sends them off.
Right.
Sends them off to get the job done. Turns out when they got there, they didn't have much to do.
Right.
Apparently the local mayor of Prato, Cesare Petrucci.
Top man.
Or just Caesar, right, as he was known.
Right. Certainly after this.
Well, that was his name, Cesare, Caesar. Yeah. Had arrested the rebels and hung the ringleaders.
One and
now
done.
There's a guy.
Yeah.
I've been complaining a lot about people in my life that are fucking useless.
Right.
Not mentioning any names. No. But in all my related projects, people who just can't get shit done, or if they do it, they do it half-assed. And this guy, Cesare Petrucci, I could do with a couple of Cesare Petrucci's.
Let's clone this motherfucker.
He's like, I don't need permission. Rest him, hung him, done. What's next? What else you got? Yeah.
He literally called up his own local militia, captured all these guys, publicly hanged the ringleaders, who were not just common thugs. These were actually, you know, these guys were had been important people in their own right. They're dead. They're hanging from the gallows. The problem is done. So, yeah, Lorenzo dodged a bullet. We'll never know what would have happened because it's already been handled.
This is what he said when he heard about it.
I want this person dead. I want their family dead. I want their dog dead. And they were.
Now, my only disappointment is that he didn't further live up to the name of his namesake and have them crucified.
Oh.
That's what he should have done.
Yeah.
Cut their throats first because he's, you know, not a cunt.
Exactly.
Now, Lorenzo obviously took note of this, and Petrucci will be earmarked for future promotion.
Yeah, he will.
So that one's down, but then a few months later, Larry gets another test of his power, this time back home in the halls of Florence. The standing council refused to appoint the Medici recommendations put forward by Tommaso Soderini for the committee that oversaw the voting for the members of the Signoria.
Mm.
Remember, at this stage, the way the voting works is, listen, you can vote for anybody you like as long as it's one of these five guys.
Right. And they did.
As long as it's one of these guys, you can vote however, because we have democracy.
That's right. Oh, but I guess are they maybe testing this very young man to see what he'll do? But for however it comes about, the very foundation of Medici power is being tested. Actually, it's being thwarted at this point, and he's got to deal with this.
And there's not a lot he can do at this stage, so he lets it go ahead.
Yeah,
which leads to a period where there's a little bit more democratic voting until he just bides his time until he can get his Medici supporters back on the Signoria. Then he passes a law that makes sure that in the future there would always be a Medici majority on all the major councils.
Yes.
So in future it said you can vote for anyone you like as long as they have a Medici fan club badge on. Right.
War, finance,
anyone
public order.
Anyone you like.
Go crazy. Yes. I think Cosimo.
Go crazy.
I think Cosimo would have been proud. He didn't overreact. He didn't go in there bust heads. Let's wait. Because, you know, I think you said, and this was a long time ago, when they're the Signoria, whoever's in power, they're only there for like 90 days or something like that. I can't remember. But you wait long enough, it swings back around, and then he locks this in. I think his forebears would have been quite proud of how he handled it and came out even stronger in the end.
Now, and I want to remind everybody, he is only 21.
He's got it. He's handling
at this stage.
Yeah.
He handling business, as you like to say. Next, he invites old Mr. Rapey Rapey, Limmy Limmy Limmy, Mr. Pull Your Arms Off.
Well, I'm fucking your eyes.
Galley.
Right?
Gal Gadot Sforza.
Right.
From Milan with his wife, Bona. Uh-huh. And boy, did he.
Yeah, 1471, he invites them, the Duke of Milan. And I can't remember if we mentioned this before, but she is a member of the House of Savoy because the Sforzas had kept up the Visconti tradition of marrying a Savoy to protect Milan's northern Alpine frontier. So again, marriage is all about politics. But the point is, Lorenzo is going to try to do what...
That's what I tell Chrissy. Marriage is all about
That's
politics.
Right. Don't expect happiness. Mm. You're married to a rock star. Mm. Yeah. So the point is he's going to try to pull a Cosimo and bring this guy in. Pageants, celebrations, charm his pants off. Because every once in a while you need to renew the alliance, the enthusiasm behind the alliance. And that's what this very young man is going to do. And I think we should make this point. Now that he's got the Florentine government truly on lockdown, he can focus on other equally important things. And that is foreign policy. And that's what he's doing here.
I make Chrissy refer to me as published author Cameron Riley now.
What about
whatever she talks to
filmmaker or documentarian? That's kind of sexy.
Well, yeah. When the film comes out,
but for now,
I'll say that. Yeah.
She's so lucky.
Yeah. But yeah, I know. I that's what I keep telling her. You're so lucky. Just refer to me as published author Cameron Wright. That's all I ask.
If I can give the other side of that, the other night my dog threw up, I'm cleaning it up and I'm sitting there bitching about it and I go, this is the life of a fucking rock star. She had the nerve to say, but you're not a rock star. And I'm like, whoa. And in some segments of society, that's exactly what the fuck I am. And then I continue cleaning up the dog vomit. But the point is, she hurt my feelings.
You should take it to the next midget monthly meeting and see how they treat you.
You got my back, Cam. Oh, that means so much to me. Anyway.
Midgets Monthly. But you're even on the cover, I think, of Midgets Monthly, weren't you?
I was. I got it framed in the office. She knows that. She fucking knows that.
Gal Gadot, Sforza, comes with his wife, Bona. By the way, I mean, she was House of Savoy, as you said. At the time, that was a relatively small country,
right,
bordering sort of France and Italy. But by the end of the 19th century, they were the kings of all Italy. The last kings of Italy were from the House of Savoy. So,
nice. You know,
they did okay.
They did well.
The House of Savoy. Yeah. I mean, on one hand, you could say, on the other hand, you could say they're the ones that fucked it all up and you know, it became a republic because they couldn't hold on to it, depending on how you look at it.
True.
Anyway, that was to come later. Marrying a Savoy was a long tradition the Sforzas had brought over from the Visconti before them, as you said, so they, you know, they could protect their Milanese border. Right. Anyway, Galli brought with him 2,000 knights, soldiers, falconers, and 500 hunting hounds.
God. Oh, my God. He likes to party.
All decked out to the max.
Right.
Now, Lorenzo wouldn't, you know, be outdone, so he puts Galli up at the Palazzo Medici, surrounded by the greatest artworks produced in 1,500 years. And as soon as Sforza went back to Milan, he started to commission his own masterpieces. So that's how the Renaissance spread to Milan. Ooh. He was like, oh, no, he didn't.
Gotta get me some of that.
And he Oh, he got himself some of stuff, too. We'll get into that. But this lavish treatment of Gal upset Ferrante, the king of Naples. We've talked about before. Right. He was the illegitimate son, I think, of the previous king of Naples, from memory.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy that you mentioned earlier had sent the white charger for Lorenzo's wedding, but he didn't get a party invite. So he's like, what the fuck is up with that? I gave you a white horse. My silver, I called him. My favorite white horse.
Right. And this is the thanks I get. Fuck you.
This is the motherfucking thanks I get. Yeah.
Yeah, there's always ways to piss. I mean, it's nothing more than international alliances, and Cosimo is really good about balancing that out or whatever. And this kid is learning you can do something on one hand, but you damn sure better be able to please and placate some other leader. And he didn't do that. And now the king of Naples is pissed.
As I always say, you can't please everybody.
No, so don't try to please anybody.
That's right. That's what I tell my wife in bed. Listen, you can't please everybody, so I'm not going to try and please anybody.
Technically, it's not true. I am going to please myself, so there's that.
Yeah. Well, that's the only person you can ever please is yourself. That's our model of podcasting. We're having a good time.
Fuck everybody else.
We don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't care if anyone else likes it. Hey!
Yeah.
I should have done this. Well, shout out to James Caffin. It's going to be weeks late by the time he hears this. But James Caffin, the guy who painted the Podfather portrait of me, tattoo artist extraordinaire, he and his lovely wife, Chelsea, just had their first baby.
Aww, congratulations.
A couple of days ago. Leo. Pope Leo Caffin.
Oh, okay.
Pope Leo Caffin. Yeah. That's what he called him. So big cheers to local boy James Caffin.
He did good.
And Chelsea. Yeah. Well, we don't know yet if he's a keeper. We don't know if he's actually
3 months.
A potential future potential future pope. Right. Yeah, we will decide. Yeah, there will be trials held.
Can I get in on that? Because that would be fun.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Right. Yeah, yeah. You'll just have to sit for a painting. James has always wanted to paint you naked on all fours in the corner of the portrait of me.
I'm there. Done.
So just it'll be a good opportunity. We'll kill two birds with one stone.
Done and done.
In 1471, Pope Paul II died Aww. And was succeeded by Pope Sixtus IV.
I love that. Sixtus the Fourth.
Yeah. Sixtus the Fourth. Now, he actually had a song written for his coronation as Pope. Yeah.
When I walk on by, girls be looking like Debbie Fly. I pimp to the beat, walking down the street in my new the freak, yeah. This is how I roll, animal print pants out control. It's Red Bull with the big ass fro, and like Bruce Lee, I got the clout, yeah. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. Girl, look at that body. I work out when I walk in the spot. Yeah, this is what I see. Sexy and I know it.
That was his song. I'm sexy right. and I know it. He called himself. He used to walk around the Vatican.
Yeah, very humble man.
I'm Pope Sixy and right. I know yeah. it. Yes, very humble man. And he's going to play a big role in our story moving forwards, more than most of the popes. Yeah, Sixy and I know it. Yeah, the previous pope,
right,
Paul II.
Yep.
Had been a humanist from Siena, beautiful little town right. just outside of Florence. Should go there sometime. It's lovely.
Road trip.
But this guy, Sixy, not as cool.
Right?
Not down with the humanism so much.
He had other attributes. Mercy wasn't one of them, I'm guessing. No, so he was very driven. He was intelligent. He was no nonsense. He was born on the Ligurian coast near Genoa on the northwest coast of Italy. I mean, he goes into a Franciscan monastery when he's young. He obviously has some intelligence, some promise. But at the same time, I think some people start to notice that he's rather hard-headed. But he's as pious as he is, which is nice. He's also ambitious. He works really hard, and he advances quickly through the various steps that you need to do before you become Pope.
Yeah, he was originally known as Francesco della Rovere.
Ooh, nice.
And the name Sixy hadn't been used since the 5th century, so he's bringing Sixy back, is what he used to say. Bringing Sixy back, so I'm Sixy and I know it.
Oh,
one of his first acts as Pope was to declare another crusade against the Ottoman Turks.
Oh, good
which,
luck.
Which, like most of their recent crusades, people, it sort of fizzled out pretty quickly. He's also known for his nepotism.
Yes.
He basically made all of his nephews cardinals.
Hey, that's why I'm here.
Well,
he doesn't trust people, so why not bring in family? Is it tacky? Yes, but... it's the results that matter, and hopefully he can rely on his family.
And he chose the name Sexy for a reason. He's described as a tall, stocky man with a huge head, a flattened nose, and no teeth, which I know is how you like him, Ray.
You normally have to pay extra for that, but
less bitey bitey.
Right, right. Nibbly.
You know,
right.
you like him that way. When you go looking for homeless people,
yeah. I'm like, how many teeth
down
he got?
Under the bridge.
How many teeth he got?
Yeah.
Four?
Yeah,
too many.
Yeah.
Too many.
Yeah. And they, you always tell them.
I'm not really into jabby jabby.
And I
don't think I could take anything to my penis.
So the less teeth. They have the better.
All the way around, yeah. I find.
Like, particularly, you know, particularly when it comes to getting close to your...
Jew hammer.
You don't want...
You don't want teeth.
You don't want
hammer.
Too many teeth.
Right.
Yeah. You don't want Sarah Jessica Parker with those big fucking chompers
Ouch.
Coming at you.
Ooh, no, no. Anyway, but he is
Yeah, so that's...
Ambitious. Yes.
He's almost as ugly as Lorenzo,
right.
this guy, but that's why he calls himself Sexy. Now, his first aim was to gain control of the central Italian papal states, which, as we've talked about before, at this stage weren't really in papal control. Right. They'd been taken over by various mercenaries who declared themselves the rulers, and he wanted to get, he wanted to bring, make the papal states great again. He's going to bring sexy back and make the papal states great again.
He's going to do it all. He's going
to
do it
all. Yeah, but before we get to that, when he first gets his coronation, Lorenzo goes to pay him a visit.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, you got to congratulate the new pope because it's tacky if you don't. And as far as Lorenzo can tell, Sexy Four is impressed with this young, intelligent, not beautiful man. And the good news is, thank God Almighty, thank Christ on the cross, the Medici's get to keep the papal account. Things are looking good. However, the Pope does have some less than positive news. When Lorenzo asks, can his brother, his younger brother, Giuliano, be made a cardinal, the Pope has to say, I'm terribly sorry. All those positions have been filled. I know that you're married into the Orsini family. I respect that. But currently we have no vacancies. So yes on the bank, no on the cardinalship.
And of course, you know what? Really, Lorenzo's interested in is the bank, the status of the bank.
Right.
That's his prime, and the alum business. Yes. Make sure that they're going to keep that the control over the alum business. That's where the money's come. And he rocks up laden with gifts, but he also gets some gifts.
Oh, that's nice.
From the Pope. The Pope presented Lorenzo with two ancient Roman marble busts, one of Agrippa and the other of Augustus.
Oh, that would be so freaking sweet. Do we know if they're in Florence now? I don't remember.
No, I did try and find out what happened to those, where they are. I was not able to track that down. Gotcha. Yeah, be good to know.
Yeah.
Maybe one of our art historian listeners in Florence could tell us.
That would be cool.
Where they are exactly, yeah. We may have seen them.
Yeah.
Now, as you say, though, Larry wanted the Pope to make his younger brother Julian,
right,
a cardinal.
Please.
And as we'll see, the Pope had other plans for Giuliano.
Yeah.
I could.
Or not.
Yeah. Mm. Let me get back to you on that. Now, in order to equip the fleet that he was going to send out to attack the Ottoman Turks, Sexy was forced to sell a large part of the fortune, the treasury, that Paul II had built up. We've talked a little bit about the papal treasury in the past. He sold 54 silver shells filled with pearls.
Yeah.
And a diamond valued at 7,000 ducats, which the Medici Bank snapped up for bargain basement prices. They picked up all of these silver shells and this diamond to help finance his ill-fated crusade. Right. Now, Lorenzo also bought vases, gemstones, and cameos from the papal treasury to add to his own collection. Basically, this Pope didn't give a shit about art. He was just selling everything off to get money to go kill himself some Muslims.
Amen.
That's all he cared about.
It was a yard sale.
Look,
Jesus
doesn't care about art.
No.
Jesus wants blood. Blood in the streets is what Jesus wants.
Dead Muslims.
Dead Muslims. That's what God wants. That's what gets him hard. Dead Muslims.
And don't forget the tithe. Thank you.
The what? The tithe?
The 10%, what's it called? Tithing?
Oh, tithe.
Tithe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, kill Muslims and tithe, please. Thank you.
Mm. On a more practical note, though, Sexy did reappoint Lorenzo's uncle, Giovanni Tornabuoni, as the depositor general of the Apostolic Chamber. So the Medici Bank was looking strong there. And then, not long after that, in February 1472, Sexy also gave the Medici plenary indulgences.
Ooh, tell me about
to
them.
Lorenzo, Giuliano, their mother Lucrezia, their grandmother Contessina, as well as to several of the Medici loyalists like Tornabuoni and Bernardo Rucellai. Now, a plenary indulgence is a forgiveness of all sins.
Get out of hell card.
So basically, yeah, get out of hell free card. You can do what we've talked about this before. This is the, you know, this is the greatest thing.
Yeah.
You can go and rape and fuck and kill and pull people apart. They, as soon as he got this, the first thing that Lorenzo did was go to Galeazzo Sforza's torture chambers and goes, hey,
let me in.
I pull somebody apart limb from limb? I got this get out of jail free card. It's the best.
I'm dying to use it. Yeah. Well, I'm like, dying.
Let me do some shit. I want to do some shit.
I want to fuck shit up.
Let me do some crazy shit. Yeah. Fuck shit up. He went and found some of these frat boy knights.
Oh.
Let's fuck some shit up.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's hour two.
Oh, we're out of time. Well, we're getting to Galeazzo next.
Yeah.
Galeazzo, very unhappy when he heard about this because he didn't have a get out of jail free card.
No.
And as we can see, he was going to need it pretty soon. So that will be on episode 78. Of the Renaissance Show. Don't forget, if you haven't bought my book yet, you should be guilty and embarrassed.
Right.
There is no plenary indulgence for people who don't buy my book and then write glowing, positive reviews of it on Amazon and Goodreads.
Not just
and
a bathroom
get the
wall.
Word out there.
Exactly.
So.
Don't make us Vestadio, please.
And the first person who gets a tattoo of the book cover. You know, they will be in line for something special from me. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's going to be pretty special.
Yeah.
It's so special. They get to something very special.
For you
like.
Or to you. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, that's that. Let's get out of here.
Oh, I was thinking white people. Sorry, I feel bad now.
You think I'm fucking with you? I am not fucking with you.
Have you made your decision for Christ? Fuck you! That's my name!
The leads are weak. The fucking leads are weak. You're weak. It takes brass balls to say.